Al Jazeera Podcasts.
Today, while Palestinians watched Iranian missiles flying overhead en route to Israeli targets, they also had to contend with another fire on the ground.
A mainly unarmed Palestinian population facing many heavily armed Israeli settlers who've been growing in numbers and increasing their violence.
I'm Malika Bilal, and this is The Take. The Israeli War Cabinet met on Tuesday for the fifth time since Iran sent hundreds of drones and missiles their way on Saturday.
Explosions lit up Israel's night sky as interceptors took down dozens upon dozens of Iranian-launched drones.
The attack was a response to an earlier Israeli attack on Iran's consulate in Damascus.
Iran has said it wants revenge for a suspected Israeli attack almost 2 weeks ago.
This is Israeli government spokesman David Mentzer briefing the media after one of those meetings.
I can tell you that Israel retains all its options.
And he went on to say,
so we reserve the right to do everything in our power, and we will do everything in our power to defend this country. This country will be defended.
Al Jazeera's Hamda Salhout has been following the story from Tel Aviv.
Early on Tuesday, the Israeli army announced that they had conducted a series of drills to prepare for some sort of wider conflict, specifically on Israel's northern border.
Israel and Hezbollah are at war. Villages in southern Lebanon, within 4 kilometers of the border, have become closed military zones.
All of this is seemingly a waiting game, but Israel's war cabinet will ultimately be the ones who decide what kind of response, when, and where. There are also a lot of discussions within the Israeli political realm. You have members from the far right, known ultranationalists, who want to see a big response at the soonest possible date. Whereas Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu was reportedly telling his ruling Likud party that there will be a response, but it has to be done wisely and that it can't come from the gut. So that the Iranians can wait in anticipation, just like they made the Israelis wait.
There's even talk about an international coalition to assist Israel.
The Israeli defense minister has been talking about some sort of cooperation within the region that could possibly assist with Israel's response, the same way that this international coalition helped Israel with air defense on Saturday night. And while a lot is still up in the air, it is seeming that Israel is going to respond, but everyone is just waiting for an answer on how exactly that's going to happen. Meanwhile, while all of this is taking place, Israel's war on Gaza continues, but that's not the only thing that's been making headlines. We're also seeing an increase in settler violence across the occupied West Bank that is primarily going unnoticed because of all of the other things that are going on within the Israeli political landscape.
The dust hadn't settled from Friday's arson attack by Israelis in the occupied West Bank before settlers again rampaged through Palestinian villages on Saturday.
That was Al Jazeera's Nida Ibrahim. She's been following the settler violence in the West Bank.
This has been the largest, the strongest wave of settler attacks against Palestinians. But it's a continuation of settler violence that has been already on the rise for months.
All Israeli settlement activity in the West Bank is illegal under international law. And there are about 700,000 Israelis living in those settlements throughout the occupied territory. There's always been friction between them and the West Bank's Palestinian residents. And Nida has been reporting on what that's looked like since October 7th.
Just since the start of the war on Gaza, the UN has recorded more than 700 settler attacks against Palestinians. Rights groups say 94% of reported attacks go unpunished.
Most recently, settler mobs rampaged through the village of El Mughayr, northeast of Ramallah, attacking Palestinians and their property.
So what happened in El Mughayr is that on Friday, news emerged that there is an Israeli settler, a 14-year-old who was grazing his sheep, went missing.
Intense search parties were conducted on Friday after the 14-year-old shepherd was declared missing when he was last spotted leaving his home.
His name was Binyamin Achimayir. And after his body was found, Israeli settlers stormed El Mughayr.
Dozens and dozens and dozens started arriving to the village. At one point, people in El Mughayr say that the numbers of settlers who were attacking them were estimated hundreds. They talk about more than 1,000, the majority of them armed. And they started attacking their homes, burning their vehicles, their houses, killing one Palestinian, Jihad Abu Aliya, a 25-year-old, who, according to his relatives, was visiting them when he was peeking to look at what's happening. He was shot. Palestinians say that the Israeli settlers, when they attacked, they were accompanied by the Israeli forces. And indeed, when we went there, one entrance to the village was closed. So we went through another village called Abu Falah. And as we were standing, we saw the Israeli soldiers setting up a checkpoint, even making it difficult for ambulances going in and outside of El Mughayr. They were stopped and they were asked and they were inspected before they were allowed to go in and out of the village. So people felt like they were alone. No one was able to come to their rescue.
Nida says that while she was in Abu Falah, she saw settlers coming in too.
We've seen dozens and dozens of settlers going down the hill to the village of Abu Falah before they burnt an agricultural structure. And just minutes of us covering the fire, covering the settler violence, we hear gunshots, and it was impossible for us to know if it came from the direction of settlers or the direction of the Israeli forces. But they stood silent, did nothing when they saw the gangs and the groups of Israeli settlers setting fire to the house. This is something that whenever we talk to Palestinians everywhere, they tell us the Israeli army is what gives those settlers the impunity, the fact that they feel safe to carry out more and more attacks.
That leaves Palestinian families to defend themselves from settler violence on their own. And for some, that's made more difficult by Israel's separation wall. Nidat told us about another story she's been covering. This also took place on Saturday night in a different part of the West Bank.
We visited the family of Hamid in Al Jalazon refugee camp, where already their house is inside the Israeli separation wall. So the separation wall was built around the illegal Israeli settlement of Beit El, but there was one house stopping in the way. So they kind of locked him in with a gate. And when the Israeli settlers attacked him the first time on Saturday night, Palestinians came and took that gate down to be able to defend that family, the Hamid family. When we talk to them, they talk about the fear in their little girl's eyes and the fact that they're traumatized because of the growing settler attacks against them, especially since the war started. And even after we left, a few hours later, we heard that 4 people from the Hamid family were injured as settlers attacked them again. And again, this time they say, we don't know who was shooting towards us, if it was the settlers or the army. And you have the son of Hazem Hamid, who has been talking to us about his girl's fear. His son has been hit with a live bullet to the chest. He's now in a stable condition, but you know, that gives you an idea about the scale of those attacks and the fact that they happen regularly and Palestinians feel that they happen with no accountability and a lot of impunity.
Nidat told us that what Israel says about settler violence in its official reactions doesn't match its actions on the ground.
After the body of the 14-year-old was found near Al-Mughayyar village, we've heard Israel's Defense Minister Yoav Gallant urging people to avoid taking the law into their own hands.
Defense Minister Yoav Gallant issued a statement saying the security system will find the murderer and bring him to justice. He further added retaliatory actions will make it harder for our soldiers in their mission. We must not take the law into our own hands.
But we've been already seeing settlers attacking Palestinian villages even before the body was found. And it's that same law that differentiates between Palestinians and Israelis. It's that same law that helps the majority of settlers to avoid any accountability. You know, according to human rights organizations, 94% of reported settler attacks end without an indictment. So Palestinians believe that settlers are an important mechanism when it comes to the Israeli government's intention to expand settlements, to bring more and more Israeli settlers into the occupied West Bank, and that violence is a part of that scheme to push Palestinians out of their lands. And we've seen since the war how more than 1,200 Palestinians were kicked out of their homes because of settler violence, mainly Bedouin communities who've had to leave their homes because, as one Bedouin told me, I'd rather live somewhere else, even though it's going to be difficult, but at least I would know that my son will be safe.
After the break, Palestinians in the West Bank face arrests and abuse by the Israeli forces.
The Inside Story podcast dissects, analyzes, and helps define major global stories. We get into the details with experts who explain how policies affect people. The Inside Story podcast by Al Jazeera. Find us wherever you listen to podcasts.
For Palestinians, the threat of violence comes in many shades. There's Israel's war on Gaza, where the death toll now stands at more than 33,000. There's the settler violence in the West Bank that Nida has been reporting on. And then there's the threat of imprisonment, a threat so constant it has its own day. Today, April 17th, is Palestinian Prisoners' Day, where people call on Israel to release the more than 9,000 Palestinians held in Israeli jails.
Rights groups like Save the Children, Adamir, Human Rights Watch have accused Israel of physical and psychological abuse and deprivation of food and water inside these prisons.
Nida told us about the raids, where Israeli forces take those people prisoner or even kill them.
Since the beginning of the war, we've seen those Israeli raids intensify, not only as, you know, soldiers who are coming in armored vehicles, but also Israeli forces who are disguised in Palestinian clothes, and they are pretending to be Palestinians before they use their weapons against the people there.
Undercover Israeli soldiers, men and women, have entered a hospital in Jenin in the occupied West Bank, disguised as doctors and patients. Inside this room, they executed three Palestinians.
It's a state of constant fear, anxiety, and uncertainty, especially if you live in Jenin, in Nablus, where we've been seeing a lot of raids take place. So for Palestinians, those raids used to happen the majority of the time around evening, time, night time, and early hours of the morning, but now they're happening every day, any day, and sometimes they are taking place in rush hours where Palestinians are going from their work to their home or to the market, and they would tell you it's just a way for the Israeli forces to remind Palestinians who has the upper power, more arms and more equipment, and who can make their lives much, much more difficult if they even think about resisting Israel's occupation.
The constant state of being in Gaza or the West Bank is already one of tension. And now, Palestinians there have one more thing to contend with, the prospect of a wider regional war, as Israel weighs how to respond to Iran's attacks last weekend.
Israeli leaders say they're assessing their options, and military officials say Israel will respond when it sees fit.
You have Palestinians who were glad to see Iran send drones to Israel to show that maybe there would be some threat to Israel that would make it fear a retaliation of its aggression against Palestinians. But there are those who are scared of a full-on escalation that would lead the area into a regional war. They say that it is in the interest of the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to continue the war, to drag the U.S. into a war with Iran, to inflame the situation and stay in power. And in the occupied West Bank, you feel like the Israeli government is using the war on Gaza to continue creating facts on the ground here in the occupied West Bank by expanding settlements, by changing the infrastructure, the roads. If you would go before the war from Bethlehem to Hebron, and if you try to go now, it's a totally different road with so many entrances to villages being blocked. And as we know from the experience under occupation, the temporary becomes permanent, and those closures to cities and villages might as well be creating a new reality for people. So there's a wide range of emotions amongst Palestinians, but there's this feeling that Israel is still not deterred by the international community, and it's getting away with killing Palestinians.
And that's The Take. This episode was produced by Sayed Khalili and Farenisa Campana, with Nagin Oliayi, Amy Walters, Ashish Malhotra, Chloe Kaylee, David Enders, Sonia Bagat, Zeina Bedr, Khalid Sultan, Catherine Newhen, and me, Malika Bilal. Our sound designer is Alex Roldan. Alexandra Locke is The Take's executive producer, and Ney Alvarez is Al Jazeera's head of audio. We'll be back tomorrow.